What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
This is an audio version of the 24th Annual Dice Awards Roundtable Series. To watch the video of this episode, please visit youtube.com/officialAIAS.
Brought to you by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. This is the award celebration by game makers for game makers, honoring the games that connect players around the globe. No matter where we come from or what our interests, video games bring us together. We gather here to honor our fellow creators and the very best of interactive entertainment. Welcome to the 24th Annual Dice Awards.
Hello again, everyone. I am here with the nominees for the role-playing game of the year. Welcome to the 24th Annual Dice Awards Developer Sessions. We are super excited and super fortunate to have this wonderful group with us here of nominees. But before we get into the discussion, let's do a little bit of introductions. From Final Fantasy VII Remake, we have Hamaguchi-san. How are you, Hamaguchi-san?
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for being here. And can you share with the folks at home a little bit of information about yourself?
FF7 Remake で共同ディレクターを務めた浜口と言います。 よろしくお願いします。
Hi, nice to meet you. My name is Naoki Hamaguchi, and I was a co-director on Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate the time. From Persona 5 Royal, we have Ariane Advicula. How are you doing?
Good, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for coming and spending some time with us. Give the folks at home a little bit of information about yourself as well.
So I'm the communications manager at Sega, here representing the Persona 5 Royal development team, and of course the entire Atlas and Sega team. Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here as well. From Wasteland 3, we have Brian Fargo. How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. How are you? How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Give the folks at home a little info about the work you've done in the space as well.
Well, I've been in the industry since the 80s. I founded a company called Interplay. We did a lot of great games back then, Baldur's Gate and Fallout and Bard's Tale and Wasteland. And then I founded this company that I'm in now with InXile. We became part of Microsoft recently. And most of my background has been with role-playing games.
Awesome. Awesome. So happy to have you with us as well. And rounding out our group, we have from Yakuza Like a Dragon, we have Yokoyama-san. How are you doing, Yokoyama-san?
Dōmo konnichiwa. Ryūga Gotoku series de chief producer yatteru Yokoyama desu.
Hi everyone, nice to meet you. I'm the chief producer on the Ryūga Gotoku Yakuza series, and my name is Yokoyama.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being here. We also had our friends from CD Projekt Red with Cyberpunk 2077 nominated as well, but sadly they couldn't make it for the show tonight, but they definitely wanted to send their congratulations to all the nominees for all their amazing work. So with that said, let's jump into some questions for our crew here today. Let's see. For Brian, I'd love to kind of jump to you first and talk about Wasteland 3 and how, you know, the game has been touted as this improvement, this huge improvement over the previous game in kind of every way. You know, talk to me about, you know, how some of those improvements kind of came to be. What were some of the thoughts behind, you know, building that out in such a bigger way? I'd love to hear your thoughts about, you know, kind of the transition and the evolution of the game.
Right. Well, so, and this one, it's been a fun project because it's been a franchise that started a long time ago. And as we, you know, like I said, the first one started in the 80s. But as far as moving from number two to number three, we knew that we wanted to make a big visual upgrade, which we've done. You know, a lot of this has to do with, you know, the bigger the budget, the bigger the approach we can take. But the visuals were a big jump. We also really leaned in on a really unique soundtrack. I hired the music supervisor who worked on the Tarantino films, and we have a really great, unique soundtrack that I'm happy with. We made combat move faster. That was something that we didn't want to lose the tactical nature of it, so we moved to a phase-based system that could move quicker. But I think the things that the players embraced the most was the reactivity and the dark humor. And that was something that where we want the game to pay off as many edge cases and decisions that the people could make so that they could each sort of have their own unique experience in the wasteland.
I love that. It definitely felt like there was an evolution in kind of a lot of the different systems that went along with that. And it feels like, you know, the feedback, you know, how much of that was driven from the feedback that you got from the previous game?
Quite a bit. I mean, we try to have a very sort of blunt relationship with our fans. We love the feedback back and forth for what they're thinking, what they like and what they don't like. And we leaning in on the reactivity was a big part of it. Again, not losing the tactical nature of it. That was something that they wanted to see. We also added multiplayer, which was a new thing for us. We thought having a co-op experience with our type of deep storytelling game would be fun. And we've had a lot of, again, really great feedback from that too. So it was very much part and parcel working with the fans and things they like to see. And we'll continue that relationship.
Fantastic. And thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That's super awesome. Hamaguchi-san, this question is for you. Final Fantasy VII Remake is able to capture the essence of its original predecessor while updating its gameplay mechanics, visuals, and expanded story. Which aspect were kind of the most exciting parts of kind of connecting that with the fans? And what was the most difficult part of the element to kind of translate to the modern day?
So, yes. The いろいろな面でその原作のエッセンスっていうのは非常にこう意識はしたんですけど、その中でも最もやっぱり注力したってのは世界観の部分を一番こう意識していました。で、まあ原作の FX7 っていうのは当然当時のこう表現の技術っていうのもあると思うんですけど、その表現する幅、なんか世界観の表現っていうのはすごく断片的で表現されていたので、こうユーザーのこの、なんだろう、こうイマジネーションとかこう想像性で結構補完されている部分が多くて、それを今回の FF7 リメイクっていうのは、こうしっかりそこをこう緻密に描くことで、よりリアリティを持ったこう FF7 の世界っていうのを体験できるっていうところをすごく注力しています。なので実際にこうゲームが出て、こうユーザーのこう反応を見たときに、こうスラム街からこう表現されているメインピラーのこう表現だったり、こう市街地のプレートの表現だったりとか、まあスラム街に住む人々の仕草やセリフって回しみたいなところに結構こう反響があったっていうか、我々のこう狙った通りのものに。
Of course, with the original source material having such a large fan base already, it was important for us to sort of keep the essence of the source material. But we were very keen on sort of bringing that world view and the world setting to the game. And with the original Final Fantasy VII and the way things are depicted at that time and the technological restrictions only allowed for us to depict the story in different facets, in like bits and pieces per se. And so we were very focused on trying to depict more of the realm and the lore of Final Fantasy VII, because a lot of it kind of depended on the user's imagination and them kind of completing the picture in their minds at the time. So with Final Fantasy VII Remake, we tried to make it more intricate so that we can bring that sort of reality, sense of reality in the way we're depicting the world. And once the game did release and people started playing it and giving their feedback, we've noticed a lot of people commenting on how the slum areas were depicted and looking at the main pillar, looking at some of the outskirts of the towns and seeing the NPCs and how they're acting, how they're talking, received quite a bit of reaction from our fans. So we're kind of happy that we were able to achieve what we were going for.
Did you find that newer players who were kind of coming to the story for the first time in Remake had very, very different feedback than folks who had already kind of come to the story from the original?
やっぱりすごくこう、なんだろうな、その FF7 っていうもの自体が、こう実際プレイしてなくても、なんかこう原作だけじゃなくて FF7 の別のタイトルとかで結構この、なんだろうな、キーワードをすごく聞く、タイトルだと思ってるんですね。なので、実際にこうゲームを体験してみたときに、あ、こういうゲームだったんだ、みたいな声とかは、聞きはしましたね。あと、こう、 本編をプレイしてからこうやってみるとその違いが分かるから楽しいよとか、なんか結構そのやっているF7 自体をプレイしてくれてた人としてない人とかで結構コミュニケーションしてるのとかは結構ネット上の書き込みとかを見て私自身は結構楽しく感じていました。
With people who have not played the source material, I think they are, even if they're not familiar with the game itself, they've heard different keywords throughout their gaming lives that's stemming from Final Fantasy VII. And some people have actually tried to play the original source material after hearing or after playing the remake and fed back saying, oh, this is how the original experience was. And then there's also people who played the original and then played the remake who would compare what was different between the two. So it is quite interesting. And I personally have seen the different communication that goes on between players who have and have not played the source material. And it's very interesting to see.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for that thoughtful answer. I really do appreciate that. Ariane, I'm curious to hear your thoughts around Persona 5 Royal. And, you know, a lot of folks have talked about how this game enhances nearly every single feature from Persona 5. And I'm curious to hear, like, what areas from the original release did the team kind of really identify and focus as areas for improvement?
So for us, Persona 5 Royal is actually a brand new Persona 5 experience. For the team, you know, we brought in new faces or new twists. There's a new power that's added to that original Persona 5 narrative. And, you know, our team welcomed the opportunity to integrate those new plot lines, taking a time to revisit and like polish areas of whether it was a localization or from the development standpoint. And honestly, we also had the opportunity to work with teams internationally and deliver additional localized languages, which is a Persona series first. So honestly, the scale of the massive narrative you see in Persona 5 Royal is unlike anything we've ever worked on as a team. But honestly, we're just extremely excited that we can have people enjoy this new definitive version of Persona 5 story. And just like what we were saying earlier about fans, like, I'm also honored to see all the praise that the story has received and to be considered for this award.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think one of the things I've constantly heard about the game is how well it kind of, you know, brings all the story bits together and how, you know, everyone is kind of in love with that story. Have you heard any new feedback or new information from, again, newer players who are coming to the series for the first time and how they're kind of coming to it?
Yes, that's what's very exciting for me. I think just seeing the newer players come in and fall in love with the Phantom Thieves, Kasumi, Haruki, the new characters, it's been a joy, you know, personally for me, but also for the developers to see more and more people come into the Persona narrative. And we also just released Persona 5 Strikers. So, you know, the story continues. There is even more Phantom Thieves to enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yokoyama-san, this question is for you. Yakuza Like a Dragon feels like a love letter to turn-based RPGs, both in kind of the Ichiban's literal love of Dragon Quest and many homages to, you know, other games throughout the series. You know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you and your team have approached building the game around the story and the appreciation for it?
コマンド RPG を作ろうと思ってこのゲームを作ったわけではなくて、春日一番というキャラクターを作るところがスタートなんですね。で、春日一番のキャラクターを考えていたら、このキャラクターのストーリーを考えていくうちに、一番この物語が感動を与えるゲームシステムは何だろうって考えた結果、あの RPG システムになったっていう考え方で作ってます。まず最初のスタート地点として。
So first off, the starting point for the team was not really to create a command-based RPG game, but we wanted to really hone in on the character of Ichiban Kasuga, and we wanted to develop his character and think about, you know, how best to tell this character's story. In what ways can we make the players really dive in and feel for this character? And as we explored that, the RPG system really came to fit for this character. So that was the first starting point for us.
いや、なんか、RPG のラブレターのように感じるっていうふうに言ってくれたけど、まあ、作ってるゲームの、まあ、スタッフ、ゲームデザイナーたちがみんな、もう、ある程度若い年齢の人が多くて、青春時代はドラゴンクエストとかファイナルファンタジーと共に生きてきたっていう人が結構当たり前になってるんですね。なので、龍が如く、ヤクザシリーズが RPG になるっていうふうに、決断をした瞬間に、みんなはもうアイデアは山のように出てきて、それの集合体が、このラブレターのようなゲーム作りになったんだと僕は思ってます。だからこれは、チームスタッフ全員の、RPG というかゲームへの愛が詰まった作品になっていると思ってます。
Just to really kind of point to your comment about how this feels like a love letter to RPGs. This actually a lot of the designers on the team and the developers on the team are young in their youth.They really played a lot of RPGs. They have like a really special place in their hearts for games like Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy. And so when the decision was made to make Yakuza Like a Dragon in a command RPG style game, the staff really just had so many, it like kind of opened up their floodgates of ideas. They had such a great love for the genre and just for games in general that the ideas poured out. And so it's kind of it is sort of a huge love letter from the entire team for the genre.
Fantastic. I love to hear that. And one of the other parts of that I wanted to talk about was humor is a huge part of the game. And it feels like you've nailed, you know, bringing the funny aspects into the story. What was that for, you know, what was the conversation like from the team about making sure that that was something that still kind of came through within the game?
結局、その、キャラクターが変われば行動原理が変わるんで、すべての発想ってのは、さっきも話したけど、カスが一番だったらどんなことをしたら楽しいんだろうなってことを考えて、いわゆるプレイスポットとかミニゲームとかの中身を決めていくんですね。で、カスが一番が、仲間にしたキャラクターたちの性格とか、このメンバーがみんなでワイワイこういうことをやったら楽しいだろうな、みたいなことを考えていくと、結構自然と、そのゲームとかはデザインできて。なので、結構こう、あんまりね、苦労はしなかったんですよね。僕らが作ると何やってもあんな感じになるのかもしれないです。はい。
So to your question about humor, what we really think about as a team is really, since the main character has changed and their actions change, it really revolves around that character's personality, what would be considered funny. Like the whole team likes to think about if Ichiban Kasuga did this, it would be funny. And that kind of changes the way that we put together the mini games and just the gameplay overall. And we think about the personality of each of his teammates and all the different characters that appear and just try to kind of brainstorm like, what kinds of things can we make them do to make this a hilarious situation? And I think it really wasn't that difficult to just infuse the game with humor. I think it's just part of what our team does best.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that answer. That was fantastic. Brian, I'm kind of curious. I want to piggyback off of that question to you about, you know, talk to me about, you know, what's it like to kind of write, you know, post-apocalyptic humor. You know, Wasteland 3 has some twinges of that in it as well. And I'd love to hear your conversation or at least your thoughts about, you know, what it's like to write dark humor.
That's a good one. Well, we tend to deal with pretty dark subjects in our games, but in that darkness can be a lot of humor, especially when it really kind of catches you out of left field. And as usual, we always start with the characters. I think, let me say it another way. When we create our games, we very much focus on the moments of the game. So the story and the plot line is, of course, there. It's sort of a checkbox. It's super important that it's there. But what we care about are the interesting characters along the way. And when we think about, you know, our favorite films or our favorite, you know, books, you often remember a scene or a character or a piece of dialogue. And so we think that humor comes through that way. And again, it's sort of the darkest of things. And we really try to think about how mankind would react to this situation of a post-apocalypse, which is, you know, what's it like when the cards are thrown up in the air and we're going to start all over again? So for some people, it feels like the end. And for other people, it feels like the beginning of something new and a new opportunity to reinvent themselves. But the humor always comes through the writing. And then we also, with the player, giving them the choice. It's interesting because most of our players, they want to be the good person. They want to be the hero. They want to play it the ethical way. And we challenge them morally throughout the game constantly to see, you know, where that line is. And it's the most fun to watch when we watch people play. But what's important is that we give them the opportunity not to be a good person. And a lot of the humor comes through those choices where just the fact that the player can say it gives them a chuckle, but they often don't want to follow through because they don't want to be that person. So really, I guess the humor comes from the giving people to an ability to have a dark side along with a very dark humor with it is where we look to sort of make things work in our universe.
Thank you. I love that. It seems like a very an interesting challenge to maybe, you know, pull that through so that the player feels like they're able to still have that autonomy, but also, you know, still feel like they can interact with the spaces in a good way, right?
We have a lot of funny conversation in our writers' rooms because we tell the writers to push it, and then we'll pull them back. And so I always tell people, you should see what didn't make it in the game, you know. So anyway, some very funny conversations about where that is. But our players, they like that. You know, we make our game for an audience that, you know, would like a Tarantino film or some, you know, some of the Netflix stuff that's, you know, more or like The Boys and things of that nature, where the humor is more adult, and our audience loves that, and so we sort of pay that off when we think it's appropriate.
I love that. The last question I have is both for Hamaguchi-san and for Ariane. How has it been kind of trying to balance the, you know, ability to let some of these iconic characters grow, but also kind of being careful not to do too much so that they wind up being a little bit different than, you know, what people have kind of grown up to know and to love. Hamaguchi-san, can you please answer that one first?
そうですね。ちょっと2つのバランスっていうところとちょっと、なんだろうな、ちょっとテーマがずれちゃうかもしれないですけど、その原作の時って、その、まあ、当時のその、プレイステーションの狂言っていうのもあったと思うんですけど、こう、ユーザーが何かこう、まあ、クラウドが、その何か仕草なり感情を伝えようとするって言って、こう、まあ、声も入ってないし、こう、フェイシャルで何かこう、感情を伝えることもできないんで、結構オーバーリアクションでこう、喜ぶときはなんかこう、体でこう、すごくこう、演技で表現をしてたんですけど、今回は、もうやっぱすごくこう、20年以上こう、時が流れて、やっぱ表現ですごく映画チックな表現ができるので、こうフェイシャルでもこう表現できますし、声でも表現できます。もしくはもう声をなくても顔の表情だけで、あ、なんかちょっと悔しがってるんだなっていうのを伝えれるので、逆にその原作の時の、その、まあクラウドに限らないんですけど、その主人公たちがそのストーリーの中でどういう感情になっているのかと、ここでどういうこう思いをユーザーに伝えたいのかみたいなところを読み解きながら、こう、あの当時だったらきっとこういうことだったんだろうなみたいなのをすごくこう意識して、なんだろうな、ストーリーだけじゃなくてストーリーを表現する仕方ですね、を注力して表現しました。
So this might not necessarily describe the balance we try to strike between growing and being careful, but what we did think about is at the time of the original source material, of course,the way things are depicted cinematically is very limited because of the hardware. And so whenever the player controls Cloud and anything happens, like if he's doing some kind of movement, there is no voiceover, there is no facial like animation to show the characters' sort of actions and emotions. So it would be very exaggerated, some overactions like body actually moving, showing the different emotions of the characters. And with the remake, we were able to have a more cinematic, like movie-like depiction of these characters, with voiceover, with very nuanced facial expressions. We might have scenes where we don't even have a dialogue and it's just a facial expression trying to evoke the emotion of the particular scene. So whenever we were thinking about the characters and just how we depict all of our sort of protagonists in general, we would try to think about the emotions that we're feeling in a particular scene and sort of imagine, okay, so in this particular area, they must have tried to express this in that sort of limited capacity. And we tried to express that more throughout the story, as well as the cinematic presentation as well. So that's where we try to focus on when we were trying to create the characters in the remake.
Ariane, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well, about, you know, kind of balancing the, you know, the passion of the fans with, you know, wanting to grow the story of the characters, but also keeping them true to themselves.
That's a great question. Actually, you know, having just released Persona 5 Strikers, I do think the passion of the fans is what's always at the front of the mind of the developers and the localization team. The only thing I can think of really is just how much, you know, we've been able to take these characters and see them grow and see them continue their story. And, you know, the fans have always received them with welcome, well, open arms. And that's been a wonderful feeling to know that. You know, everybody wants them to have their best life. And I can only think of an excerpt that I heard from the localization team, but also the voice actors themselves is, you know, having known the Phantom Thieves from the original Persona 5, going into Royal felt like a homecoming. It felt like an opportunity now that they know the characters to extend and grow. You know, we know what Ryuji would say in this situation and he's gonna say it. And I think that's really just been a really rewarding thing, and the fans know it too. They see it coming, and you know that's the beauty of having very strong characters that are driving the story forward.
Well, thank you so much for your wonderful, wonderful thoughts on the games that you've made and the conversations around, you know, how role-playing games are so important and great in the space. I get to now do the fun part of declaring who the winner is for this category. Our DICE role-playing game of the year goes to Final Fantasy VII Remake. Congratulations. Awesome, awesome. Let's see. Hamaguchi-san, do you have any words to share for the folks at home?
はい、ありがとうございます。数ある中から受賞したこと、非常に光栄に思います。FF7 Remake 自体の展開というのは今後も続いていきますので、また次回作でもこの場に戻ってこれるように頑張っていきますので、はい、期待してください。今日はありがとうございます。
Having winning such an honor amongst such wonderful titles is definitely an honor. And we will continue development and we will work as hard as we can. There will be upcoming titles, and we will continue to work hard on those. Hopefully we can come back here to the DICE Awards in this situation again, but we will continue doing our best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here again and for spending time with us. Again, you have all put so much wonderful work into the games you've put into the world, and we really do appreciate all the time you spent with us here today.
The Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences is excited to share that the 2022 DICE Summit and DICE Awards will be returning in person to the gorgeous Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino and Delano Hotel in Las Vegas on February 22nd to 24th, 2022. We'll be celebrating the 25th anniversary of the DICE Awards and bringing together industry leaders to share their ideas about the many facets of the interactive entertainment industry. Stay tuned to www.interactive.org and our Twitter, @official_AIAS for more details coming soon, including special anniversary rates. We can't wait to see you again.